Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I would now like to call the Sussex County Board of Adjustment Special Meeting to order. Our first order of business will be the approval of the agenda before you this evening. Are there any additions or corrections to the agenda at this time?
No changes I'm aware of, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Wright.
Motion to approve the agenda.
Second.
We have a motion by Mr. Mills and a second by Mr. Ricker that we approve this evening agenda. All those in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, motion carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know we've put together an agenda to make use of this time tonight that kind of outlines some topics that perhaps, Board, we've talked about at various points, be good to discuss them. We are not holding this for public comment tonight, and frankly, this is more of a general discussion of the topics that we have on the agenda. I did want to let you know, and I'm sure you're aware, but as we talk about this generally, it'd be best not to speak about any specific case, although I know sometimes it may be difficult, but more just talking about general processes, procedures, and some of the standards that we look at. So I have sent down to each of you, I know we have discussed over the past several months updating the rules of procedure because they hadn't been updated since 1998, and over time I've kind of been tweaking them and working with them, and I've kind of come up with some proposed revisions that I've sent down to each of you to look at. Certainly this isn't something to vote on this evening, but it's more food for thought and discussion. And what we've done is any changes would have done is mark the new language in red and old language that's been stricken with a strike through. What we have done is taken a look at both the Planning and Zoning Commission's rules of procedure, County Council's rules of procedure, as well as a few other local ones that we've seen as well to see if there's ways that we could better our own.
You have an extra copy?
Procedures? I think I sent one down there.
Uh-huh. Where's your copy? Where's your copy?
I only had six copies.
Okay. We'll deal with it. We got one here we can use.
I don't know if you wanted me to go over each of those to let you know what I've what kind of changes we were looking at, or if you had any questions, or how you wanted to go about it, Mr. Chairman.
You've got some changes you had down there, you say?
Well, the changes are in red in the proposed findings, the proposed rules of procedure in front of you.
Yeah, those.
For example, we've added a new Rule 1, which would propose to outline some of the duties. And again, a lot of this is making it more consistent with what we see with the other county council and planning and zoning.
Okay.
To fit within those, what's there. But for example, it sets forth that Planning and Zoning Department would send out all official correspondence and handle notices, which they do now anyhow. It's just making sure that we put that in there. So some of this is just updating our rules to be consistent with what the board actually does.
Okay. Well, I guess if you've got that, then we'll go ahead and go through it and the changes.
I believe there's one right in front of you, Mr. Chairman.
This is the old one, I guess, that I had. Oh, here we go. I had the old one you sent out. Okay.
All right. Let me ask you this. If I want to add something to something that you don't have here.
Well, what I was hoping was that the board could take a look at this. I can go over kind of some of the changes now in a general format so you can kind of see what the thought process was. But the hope was that you all would take this home, look at it. We could put it on an agenda item at a future meeting as other business.
Okay. All right.
And then we can either, hey, I like this, I don't like that.
Okay.
Or even vote on it. Because at some point we will need to update this. And it needs to be something we vote on at a meeting.
Okay.
So.
And that would be the time you're saying that if you have any additions or any corrections would be at the time.
Well, if you have something that you think of, Mr. Rickard, what you could do is shoot me an email or give me a call. I'd be glad to look at it.
Oh, okay. All right.
That goes
okay.
for any of you. And then, our, you know, in future meeting, we could have it on the agenda and discuss any changes. I don't expect this to be the end-all, be-all, final draft. It's a draft, so it's open for discussion. But I'll just go through quickly some of the changes that we've made. Rule one, just the new rule one, would set forth the duties of both the secretary, the chairman, the planning and zoning department. It states what happens in the event the chairman's not here. I know, for example, when Chairman Callaway missed a meeting at least once last year, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mr. Mills filled in. So it just kind of explains that the presiding officer handles the meeting. We've also got some minor changes, such as the additions and revisions to the agenda, if any, approval of minutes and findings of fact, because that's what we do at our meetings. Again, a lot of this is just updating to be consistent with what we actually do. Page two, rule 2.3, I've added language in there that the presiding officer may terminate or limit testimony that's irrelevant or unduly repetitive. Again, crystallizing the authority of the board that if we have folks that are, yeah, we've heard it before, you can cut them off. At the paragraph 2.5, just states that the oath could be taken, and it's taken by me before. I think it just said just by the chairman. This just makes it official that I could do it, or anyone that the chairman were to direct could take the oath. Let's see.
Well, the staff used to do it before
the attorney started
doing it.
Yeah, you appointed me,
sense.
Right?
Yeah, it makes more sense that the attorney did it.
Yeah. So we just put it in there. Again, one of those things is just a
formality.
Yeah, make it more consistent with our practice.
Something a little funny there, when I was administering the oath, right, the lady came up to me and she says, no, I'm not going to swear, and I'm not going to affirm. And I looked down at Rick Burrow, and I said, I think John looked at me and looked, so I said, what do I do now? And I think we just let it go, you know what I mean? They didn't have to make a statement, but that took me by surprise.
At that point, you can believe her testimony or not.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. So I thought I had to get it either or, but I didn't need to.
Most of them won't put their hand on the Bible either.
Yeah. We put it there, you know, and then some of them will do it, but a lot of them don't. So that's fine. As long as we got something to make us comfortable that what they're presenting is truthful.
Yeah.
We've, again, some of the things that are in rules 3 and 4 are technical. Example, rule 4.1, that notice is published on the website. That wasn't on there before. It's what we do, so we would put that on there. Rule 5.3 is another kind of a technical change, again, to make it consistent with what we see on the other boards. 6.5, we're required to have 3 affirmative votes to overrule any decision, and the rule of thumb has been if you don't get 3 votes, you don't get approval for whatever you're seeking. So that just puts that in there. Again, that's consistent with what we've seen elsewhere. I found some language in rules, rule 12.1, which is, sorry, the pages aren't numbered, but we found some language that basically states that the rules are set forth in such a way that they are, they're to be kind of liberally construed. So if you deviate from them so as to have a fair hearing, it's not necessarily required that you stick to it strictly. And we've seen this elsewhere. It gives for some leeway to the board so that you can run a meeting in a fair, efficient manner. So, again, something that we've added to it. I struck rules 12.2 12 and Rule 3, because I put that in with the duties section in Rule 1. It just made sense to group them all together there. So, and some of this has been renumbered. I didn't mark all the times we renumbered. It just seemed easier not to. Standards of conduct. In the past, and I was looking at, I believe, County Council's rules, talks about signage, that limitation on folks bringing signs, wearing signs, and this is just consistent with that, as well as also about reasonable attire and conduct. That language is directly from what we've seen with, I believe, it's Council's rules of procedure.
So we had the change on Council years ago was because they actually walked in with picket signs. That you can have a badge on your shirt or sweater, but you can't carry any signs. You can't hold up any banners. You can't hold up any placards.
Yeah, and
quite a few years back.
And I don't know that we would. I mean, we get some controversial ones a couple times a year, maybe. I don't know that we've ever had one rise to that level, but it's helpful, I think, to have that in the rules, to have it consistent with how Council handles their hearings. The new 13.6 deals with applause and disruptive behavior. We make that statement at the beginning that disruptive behavior is not allowed, and, you know, cell phones and pagers and all those kinds of devices should be turned off. So it's just for that. Rule 14, we've added some language in there, and this is something that I think more to give some advice or some guidance to the public if they were to look at our rules. We are encouraging them, for example, 14.3, to submit their exhibits beforehand, supporters or opposition, so that the board can have an opportunity to review them beforehand. Doesn't mean that they have to, but I think it's encouraged, and by having that in there, hopefully will encourage others to do it. We've also put in there that they must, you know, bring a survey so that we can see what they're asking for. I think that's important, unless it's been waived by either the board or planning and zoning department. Again, we've noted here that correspondence should go through the planning and zoning office and not directly to you all. You know, and again, I don't think that happens very often, but occasionally I hear, you know, maybe a letter comes in. Really, you should be basing your opinions on the public record, and if it gets to the Office of Planning and Zoning, it's going to get put into the public record, provided it's before the hearing. We had some 14.5, the first part there is actually what we have in the rules right now about not amending it after public notice. And I know that we've had times where, you know, somebody comes in, they've asked for a side yard variance of 5 feet, and then it turns out they only need 4.7 feet, or maybe they need to go 5.2 feet. What this would allow is for, you know, that technically that's an amendment, if you were really split hairs, I think. And what this would allow for is, again, consistent with, I think, the practice, that the side, you know, if it's a side yard variance, they could amend it, provided that's what they've applied for. Now, if they were applying for a side yard variance and now they wanted to go to a front yard variance, then no, we can't do that.
It wasn't advertised that way.
Bingo. But if we've advertised for a side yard variance, then the public's on notice that they're asking for a side yard variance, and if they need to increase or decrease it based on what comes out at the hearing, that would allow for that.
Okay.
So, paragraph 14.6, again, this is basically what we go through at the beginning in the statement about, you know, identify yourselves by name and place of residence, no cross-examination of witnesses. The guy asks questions to the board. The board can then direct questions. But I thought about it a little more. I said, you know, there are times where an attorney's asking questions of their witnesses, and sometimes that's efficient, or their preferred practice. So put a language in there that allows for that. Not cross-examination, but if they had witnesses of their own. 14.7 would allow you to continue a hearing or leave the record open if you wanted to, for, you know, if you need the record supplement. Again, we do that. So I think it's just, some of this is more putting in the rules what we do. The 14.8, found this language about the oral discussion is preliminary in nature, in that, you know, you all will discuss it, you all will vote on it, you give reasons, and then we articulate them and expound upon them in a written decision. So that just says that the written decision is what's final. And that's what folks should be looking at.
That's the finding of the fact.
Correct.
Because I was going to question you about that.
Okay.
Why we, in the past, people have asked me and gotten involved where they will go ahead. We are like a vacation type of situation, you know, where people have their homes here. Then all of a sudden they're away for a month and they come back. They didn't know anything about the neighbor next door getting a variance to a side yard, let's say, and they turn around and they say, hey, how come this? I wasn't, you know, I don't know anything about it or anything. Well, the person is starting to build. Okay, they think when they leave the podium and let's say we approve their variance.
Well, they shouldn't.
That's it.
They shouldn't, because they get a letter from the Planning and Zoning Office, which states that any activity is at risk until the approval of the findings of the fact and the appeal period lapses.
I was just wondering whether that might be something we might want to let them know the same way.
Might not. It could be something we could add to the statement at the beginning.
You've got a lot of attorneys that know that, you know, but somebody like we know there's a lot of people who come up here that are nervous, they're upset about being here, and they think they, once we say yeah, they go, okay, I'm going home and start building.
And some know the risk and are willing to do it anyow. So
we get the letter. Some of the attorneys come in the day after the board meeting and want approval of their survey showing what was submitted to the board as their approval.
Yeah.
And we have to stamp it, and we have to acknowledge to them that they have to be reminded that it's still subject to appeal.
Right.
Because the findings haven't been prepared yet.
Well, I just want to know.
We still stamp the drawing.
Okay.
I just want to know your thinking there.
I think it's at risk. I mean, I think any work they do is at risk. Until that findings are approved and the appeal period is lapsed without an appeal.
But I think they're not, you know, some of them are not leaving here with that in mind. Is there some way we can remind them of that?
I could, you know, if it would help, I could add a statement at the, you know, when I make my statement at the beginning to that effect, that all decisions here tonight are preliminary in nature and final decision until a written decision is approved.
I think that would be good, because we do have some ask at, you know, can I go ahead and go, or can I build?
Well, how far are we out there now? How far are we out? We're finding the facts.
I just finished most of them today for the first one in February. Right. So, you know, we're running
less than 2 months.
Yeah. I mean, my guess is by the next meeting, I'll have all of February done, and maybe a good part, if not all, of the first one for March.
So the person really has to know that 30 days after the finding of the facts, that's the only safe time they can say, okay, yeah, I'm ready to go.
Yeah, I generally shoot to try to have them done between that 30 and 60-day period. It's difficult to get them done if we have a meeting, the first meeting in March, to have them done for the second meeting in March. Mm-hmm. I strive to have them for the first meeting of the following month, but last year we had several appeals that also took time, and that kind of slowed the ability to get them done, sort of, you know, just playing catch up. So that's kind of the approach that I'm taking at this point. I'm hoping that for like the next meeting we can have two or three sets of findings for you all to look at. We'll definitely have one, I know that.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I mean, you do have that in mind, and maybe something like that when you do make your presentation at the beginning, that that would include finding of the facts. This is not a final decision when the board makes that, or some kind of language.
Yeah, I can
like
look
that.
At adding some statement there, make it short and sweet, but so that people know.
It would help.
Jamie, you just said a while ago that you sent a letter after our case is over, but the finding of the
facts. Office does.
The office does the next day?
Just what the action was. Usually a day or so, but it just states what the action was on Monday night. But
and then you tell them that you got 30 days. So you put that in there too?
Jennifer types, I saw my signature's on there, but she typed.
We have stopped, we.
Stopped doing that.
Yeah, we stopped doing that.
It stopped doing that.
Yeah, there was a Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court decision that came out about timing of those. So we've kind of stopped doing those official notices right away.
But you're still sending it out, though?
I don't think you, no, it's in a minute.
I forgot, we just stopped.
Yeah, it's been recent, like in the last 6-8 weeks.
Last meeting, a couple meetings, we stopped.
So.
Why?
Were you directed to do it, or you just took it on?
There's a U.S. Supreme Court case that.
Would it affect us here?
Well, it deals with, I think it was a cell tower case, and it dealt with the triggering, there's federal acts, see, with the cell tower cases, for example, there's a Telecommunications Act, which is a federal act, and it supersedes what we do. We have to make sure that we comply with it. And they have a notice period for them that applies. And the Supreme Court came out with a decision on that. So rather than us potentially, you know, having that kick in, it's just easier not to do that letter for all of them.
Okay.
So the applicant really
doesn't even know then.
If we don't say it tonight,
at the meeting, they don't know it.
They don't even know it.
They call.
I mean, it's really not right.
Yeah.
They call.
Yeah, but I think it still would be, I mean, you know, that would be respectful to them somehow.
Yeah, I think, and, you know, we can make that statement at the beginning. I think
that
would help.
Most definitely. I think they deserve that.
Yeah.
Well, from my experience, I know a lot of people that are not familiar with the procedures of the Board of Adjustment or anything in the county, and they come up here, they're upset anyway, and they think that they got to go ahead. They just go around here and say, oh, boy.
Perhaps.
If it's good, they're ready to go, they think.
Perhaps what we could do is add I haven't looked at the application form in a little while in preparation for tonight. Perhaps we could put something there in big, bold letters that any decision made the night of the hearing is, you know, preliminary in nature, subject to the written findings of fact, and
there's the language. Yeah.
Something
add that into your new ones.
Something
you're
like
on,
that
right?
That just gets
you're
added.
All new ones right now, right?
I am, and it does state that, and the existing one does state that as well.
I thought it did.
Yes, and so. It's in bold, so it,
well,
it
why
is there.
Well, when they get done, will we get to see a copy of them also before they're implemented?
Sure.
You know, I mean, we don't have no say on it, but it would be nice if we could see them.
Not a problem.
Okay, great.
We can make some copies
if you want. Yeah.
What about the surveys? When they come in the next day and want the survey approved, so they can go to settlement, should I stamp the survey?
Well, if somebody appeals it and it gets overturned.
It's done as far as getting it recorded. It still could be appealed. Same way with them getting a building permit so they can start. They're still subject to an appeal.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like we're dragging it out more and more all the time then if we can't send them anything.
That's why I asked.
And good point. And, I mean, from the time the applicant comes in and applies, you're at least a month ahead, right?
Well, the applicant applied because they just getting ready to go to settlement on Friday and found out there's an issue with their survey.
Yeah.
They come in and file their application. It takes 8 to 10 weeks to get to the board. Then it takes 4 to 6 weeks to get the findings after a decision, and then we have to come to a board meeting, first available board meeting, for signature approvals, and then test.
That's what I'm saying.
Could be 3 or 4 months before they get an actual
that's
final
an awful,
approval.
Well, to me, that seems like an awful long time to be, you know, someone depending on a decision. And I know I've even thought about it a lot of times when we've had to table cases and things like that, and, you know, however, I'm not diminishing the fact that the thought process and review of a lot of the testimony and stuff should be done, but it just seems like we get longer and longer if we can't send a letter out preliminarily to say, well, the verbal vote of the board was this or that, and just...
Well, the issue I bring up is the Supreme Court case. And the Chief Justice wrote a dissent to it that was kind of enlightening, and it's kind of, you know, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court didn't really like the decision of the majority. It was, I think it was a 5-4 decision.
Yeah.
So it was, but it was one of those ones that I would rather us not do it for all of them than to do them for some and then accidentally send one when we shouldn't have for a case.
Or in the future, somebody references that case to appeal and turn it around.
I mean, ultimately, I'd rather have your decisions upheld rather than some sort of technicality.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the purpose of that. And I agree. I would prefer, it'd be great if the timelines were better, but, you know, there are guidelines that we have to go by that, you know, even, you know, things such as notice requirements for this board. You know, we're hamstrung by that, and that's a state statute, so...
I know Jeff and all of us have been on the board for quite a while, and it seems like you say, Jeff, that it just seems longer. We keep getting more technical and more, you can do this, you can't do that, and it just keeps going getting more. And I think just the commission had a problem in that, right, Lawrence, where they would, and you would have to hold special meetings because they would get so behind in all the paperwork that they got to go through, right?
And, we have one this week, Ironbank.
And they, and this is, and like Jeff said, it's becoming more and more. The board never had that, really had that problem, but it seems like it's getting more and more.
Well, if you went through the process I started reference earlier, you get to the public hearing, you rendered your decisions, the minutes are being prepared by Jenny, then I proof the minutes, and she makes some corrections, and she sends it to Jamie to review, so he can have the minutes to correct, and then he does his findings based on what he's already taken down in his own mind, and notes plus whatever Jennifer and I had proofed already. Then he gets back, comes back to you as the minutes and the finding of facts later on, so it's not a simple process like some people, they want their approval next day.
We live in a world of instant gratification.
Not that easy.
Yeah.
Well, and you got to remember, if you're going to, you know, with the findings, they need to show the evidence upon which you made your decision and the rationale behind it. So, and, you know, a lot of times we'll get thick packets with exhibits, and we want to make sure we're giving them proper reference. And
What if the minutes were approved and the findings aren't finished, but the minutes are approved, then we could stamp drawings, then we could issue building permits. That's a lesser time period in between getting the findings finalized. Thank you.
I know that the way I look at it is I do the minutes and the findings at the same time.
Oh, well, that's fine. I was just trying to see if there was a shortcut.
Nah. I'm still brainstorming ways we can streamline the process, so our office is looking at that.
Oh, that's good.
One of the things, just to make sure we're moving along here, 14.9, I added language in here about conditions and the conditions that you would be allowed to put on there. And basically it says whenever a condition is put on, the condition shall be stated in the decision, which we do, and that shall be valid only as long as the condition or conditions upon which it improves, was approved exist, or if there are conditions that you all have put on there that they're adhered to. So I think that gives us some weight to enforceability of your decision when you put conditions on there. So it just spells it out. Again, consistent with what your practice has been. Anyway. We've added this Rule 15, and it's about a page and a half. And what we've done is there really wasn't anything there about the order of proceeding, about who goes when. And I know we mentioned it at the beginning, but I thought it just... Again, since it's how we're handling our meetings, and I think we should put who goes where and how we go about it, that the applicant or appellant has an opportunity to present their testimony and evidence and present their witnesses, that the board secretary, the board's attorney all have an opportunity to ask questions. Then we ask for those in support. Then we ask for those in opposition. And then I put in there, because we've had it come up once or twice about rebuttal testimony and sur rebuttal, that generally the applicant would be afforded an opportunity to do rebuttal. And then if the chairman where presiding officer's case may be would allow for sir rebuttal testimony, very limited based on only the rebuttal testimony. We've done that in the past, but I think it's just, it gives us some, again, consistency with what you all have done. And we talk about the exhibits that they are marked by the recording secretary. Hearsay evidence is something that we occasionally get. You know, I just bought the property. The prior owner told me they've had it since the 70s, and they've done this, that, or the other. If you believe it's helpful to making your decision, you believe it to be of truthfulness, you can consider it. Noted here that you can set time limits. I'm sure Mr. Mills is happy to see. And that, again, you have the right to terminate or limit testimony, which is irrelevant, unduly repetitive, or provocative. So if we've got somebody who's shouting or making salacious allegations, and, again, we have that language at the statement that we do at the beginning that you all don't hear anything that is discriminatory against a person within a protected class, you know, something provocative might fit within that, and you could limit them. And then we've stated here that once all the testimony has been presented, the public hearing is closed, and no new testimony or evidence will be permitted unless the board votes to leave the public record open. So, those are the changes, gentlemen. I know it's a lot to perhaps digest right now, and I don't expect you all to have, look at it and see if you
digest that a little bit.
There is one, 13.4.
Okay.
Regarding the media and their ability to be disruptive, it hasn't been a real problem overall, but there have been times in the past where TV cameras with bright lights are disruptive, and I think that any photographer moving around or what have you. It's distracting, and I think that maybe we should, be more specific in regard to that.
Okay.
As far as, no flash, no lights.
Back when this chamber was created, there was discussion about a limitation on an area specifically set aside for reporters and photographers or cameras or whatever.
Right.
I mean, it never was specific other than the first two rows or the second and third row have little desks that fold down for the piano hinges for the reporters have something to write on.
Right.
But then there was going to be a limit on how far they could bring a camera, so,
Yeah, I don't recall the case, but I do remember one that was very controversial. It may have been the Bethany Tower. But I recall that there was one of the TV stations had a camera with a very bright light, and it moved from the back to the side. And my thought at the time was, you know what, they could do that from the back. They don't have to come. They got to zoom. They don't need to come be moving around. That was very distracting to me. No one else said anything, but I think it might be a good idea to just, address that.
Well, I guess one of the questions I'd have, Mr. Mills, the language you've got in there now is what's in our current rules. It says shall conduct themselves in a manner not to be disruptive. I think if what they were doing was disruptive, perhaps you could have asked at that time, maybe to have them move out of the way. Or
as I remember, it was a very controversial case. To be negative in that, didn't seem favorable. And I'm not sure if the others felt the same way, but I think we all were a little uncomfortable with it. We just didn't.
I think, why don't I do this? I'll chat with Everett Moore about what they do at the council level. Obviously, they've got media here fairly regularly to see if they have anything. And I don't recall seeing anything particularly in their rules about that. That was more specific. But I'll chat with him about that.
I got the rule right here. About three something, I think.
Yeah, I have the rules.
They're all getting a little long.
Hmm? Yeah.
Yeah. What was my point exactly?
Everything. Well, they'll keep getting longer because people
after a while, you know what? We'll probably have nothing but lawyers sitting up here.
Well, you know, there was a time where courtesy and social graces, you know, afforded us all a lot of...
And common sense came in.
Yeah, you know, it just...
Where now, we're now, you know, we really have to...
Anything goes.
We really have to...
Everybody's got rights.
Yes, our P's and Q's here. And I think Jamie's trying to, you know, do that for us, but boy, it sure gets to be...
It's the same wording as what the board had, the council's same wording, that's all it is. Members of the new duty are conducting themselves in such a manner as to not be disruptive. So, thing.
Well, that's his job, to keep us safe. So he has presented a lot of this to us, that we're making the right decisions and based on the...
Yeah, you might say, not, it doesn't have to be real wordy, I don't think, but just, you know, as not to be disruptive, in movement, not to be limited to, but in movement or lighting, you know, something to that effect, et cetera.
Jamie, the council last adopted rule of procedures has quite a bit on rules of the Freedom of Information Act. But we have a Freedom of Information Act coordinator and all that now, so through Chip. So I don't know if all that detail is needed in the board. Do we have one paragraph on the board?
Yeah, I think it was the same thing from the last one, wasn't it?
County Council Rules and Procedures is 17.6, which would be a different number. And then it goes from A to F. And then it makes reference to the Delaware Freedom of Information Act, which is a short paragraph. But there is a whole section on, so although the Freedom of Information Act does not require council to follow certain rules and procedures like A through F, which is six different items that go with it.
Well, doesn't that Title 29, Chapter 100 cover it without spelling it all out?
I'm just going by, it's a little bit different from the council.
Oh, okay.
You might want to look at the council on the 17.6. And it may not be necessary because we have, as I said, Chip Guy, who's the public information officer, he's got a regular program by in the computer system now that's where it just started. And
well, I think
it's separate. It's all handled through the office.
I think, Mr. Lang, one of the things with 17.6, and the reason we didn't put it in there was because it deals with public comment.
Right.
Whereas council at the end of their session will allow for
it, right?
The
yeah,
opportunity. So that was all, I think, dealing with the rules on that. Whereas if you look at their Rule 18, the same as what we have in
Rule 18 of the council.
16.
Oh, yeah, it is. That's exactly right. That's why I was just asking that question.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think we left that out because council has that public comment session that we
do. Right. And you don't, what the board hears or what they're an axon should be what they hear at this table.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, where are they? That's the difference between quasi-judicial and parliamentary. Commission can go out and look at sites and see what they see, but they still make their decision based on what they hear and discuss in a public record.
That pretty much covers it when you say we have to hear by Title 29.
Right. Yep. I didn't see a need to
put anything.
Elaborate.
Yeah. Like I said, I was trying not to reinvent the wheel here if we didn't have to. There were some things that in reviewing our rules with council's rules and the commission's rules, it made sense that, they have it, we don't. We need to put that in. So I think there was a lot of that. We're pulling language from one to the other.
Instead of writing you an email, I would like to include in right after call to order the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag, if that would be all right with the board.
Mm-hmm.
Fine with me.
Fine with me.
Fine with me. God only knows we need it.
Yep.
Can we say God in it?
I don't know. You better ask our attorney. I'm
pledge allegiance. You can't change that.
Can't change that anywhere.
And you're going to leave that off. You've been appointed already. How you like that, huh? That's yours. Make sure the flag and everything's up and get them to attention. Okay?
Especially Mr. Hudson. And when he drifts off, I'll say, oh, by the way.
Oh, my gosh. I'm not going there now.
It's a great idea, bud. I like that.
Thank you.
That's funny. Yeah, I think that's good. Yes, indeed. We do need that. Honestly, Mr. Rivers. Okay. Is there any other?
I got on the draft that you sent. I got looking at that. On the bottom, the last, when you said the 30 days, you might consider, I wonder if you consider putting that in red. Or does that be a hassle?
I prefer not to put it in red because people are colorblind, but we can bold it and maybe italics. We can do something to make it.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't. I'm on the board and I know a lot of stuff now, but not knowing anything, I'll probably look at it and scan it down. I mean, something.
We can do something to make
something
it
to
stick out.
Bring that out to let people know.
You
that.
Put it in bold and put a box around it.
Yeah.
Something, yeah. Yeah. Which one? The 30 days.
And all persons are to provide a survey now with an applicant.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I mean, right.
We can tweak it again you get the rules and procedures finalized.
Yeah, I think that's necessary. I really do.
I do.
Yeah. I think we need to bring the attention to that.
One time. Yeah. Remember that? Is that where this is now?
So you're saying they're going to bracket it?
Everybody's going to
Are they going to bracket it or bold it?
Box, we're boxing that or we're putting in bold.
That's what we'll do something to make sure it's.
We've been doing that before. Yes. We got a call from the council member going, there was somebody like, there's a case in Ellendale. There was two of them. We had a tall lady and another lady that was, you know, Social Security hadn't had it done, and they waived that, and they told us to. We had stopped it there for a while now. How, you know, got back again. But I just wanted to bring that to our attention. We were stopped from doing that. You remember that, John, I think, but not.
Well, I believe the proposed rules state that they would have to provide a survey unless it was waived by the board or the office.
Well, that's fair. We have the ability to waive it.
Yeah, we got the ability to waive it. Then. But, I mean, we did run it. I just wanted to, when I see the owner.
We require a survey when it's already built.
When it's what?
When it's already built. If it's proposed and they're requesting a variance, you don't necessarily have to have a survey because you're looking at it specifically for what they're requesting. It's not built yet, so it's not physical, it's vacant. So they're asking, they got a 40-foot lot and they want a 5-foot setback instead of a 10-foot setback. You know what they're asking for.
Okay.
You can require a survey, but we haven't up till now because it's not built. We're going to have to do an as-built. They're going to have a survey to apply. They're going to have a survey to get, if they get the approval, to verify that they meet what was approved by the board.
Right.
Okay. I know they'll be running that once before.
We run into a lot, but.
Yeah, you know, you said.
I think the area where you run into it is the mobile home parks.
The
people finance it.
Mostly in Cape Windsor and Swan Keys where we have those issues, or in a park.
Based on Ellendale, we had that park too.
And in the parks we require, because we have to know all the things that they may be applying for. It may not be what they think. They might have missed something. So you got the setbacks, the spacing, et cetera. So you got more to look for. And 35%, we got to know where everything is.
Well, no, I just wanted to address that we had done it and why. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fine.
There's, since we're talking about this application, it seems that 9 times out of 10, an applicant will put down the variance request and be it somebody that's more informed, that should know that if you want to be 4 foot from the line and is a 15-foot setback requirement, that you need a 11-foot variance. It seems that we always get applications where the office has changed it and written it. And I don't know if there's a way, instead of us getting one that has, you know, both what they're asking for and what the proper terminology would be. Maybe that's in the.
We're getting them dropped off, delivered. I don't think we don't accept them in the mail often. We usually have to play phone tag to get it corrected. And then we end up having to correct the locations.
Okay.
We have to correct what they're applying for.
Okay.
And a couple other things.
Okay.
Usually it's the section of the code that it relates to.
I wasn't familiar with the process.
And you see sidebar on location, you see a change in the number, you see changes in what they're applying for, because they applied for what they wanted, not what they were really applying for.
Right, okay.
So it's using numbers.
I didn't know, why that was.
And once in a while, you see, they thought they were only applying for a side yard variance, but as we reviewed it, we found they also needed a variance to the rear for a shed that's already on the property, and we just, and maybe a front yard setback that was non-conforming, but we went to house clean the whole lot, we added it. So rather than just one little variance, we might add three. So we try to get everything that we see on the survey, when it's a survey.
Quickly glancing at the criteria for a variance, Lawrence, do you feel this is going to help them when they appear before us that they'll have their stuff
together?
Well,
we hope it does, because this gives it to them on the same application form.
Okay.
And that way they can, when they leave, they should have a copy. They should fill it out up front.
Yeah.
But it's part of the application now. It's not an attachment.
In other words, the inspector or whoever's at the counter there is walking them through this?
We don't answer it for them.
You walk them through it, though?
We can help them go through it, but we don't answer it for them.
Right.
It's up to them to answer it.
Right, but you make sure that they're aware of it.
Yeah, sometimes they'll say yes, sometimes they'll say no, and that doesn't work.
I think it's a, first off, let me say, I think it's a great idea that this is being revised, because it's like an 8-page thing now, and it's kind of, it seems like a waste. But I've often thought that, in the application or in the paperwork, leaving them a place to write things down, it's a convenience to them.
Right.
But it's really, is there a necessity for that? Because, I think it needs to be explained to them that they must convince us that they meet those standards.
Well, it depends on who waits on and how much they get information they get provided.
But we can go absolutely nowhere, right, John? Nowhere. I mean, you can have everything right here.
They got very nervous. They got it right in front of me. They still can't read it.
No, I know. Right. I know.
But we can't go. It's so important, because we can't go anywhere without them.
Right. But rather than have them write it on here, I guess this is my opinion, that if you're applying for a variance, then you should, it should be explained to you what you need to, what's required of you.
Right.
But if where you find your own place to write it, or you hire an attorney if you don't understand what the process is.
Well, if this is provided up front, the board's got it up front. Okay, when they were walked out before, or now, they have an application form. They have an attachment that says the questions. They sign it, say they're going to answer those questions. And they walk out with something similar to this to take with them to bring it back when they come back to the meeting. They come back without it.
I got you.
Or they don't have an answer to it yet.
Yeah, I got you.
So this way, it's up front. We have it.
Right.
And yeah, you can expand upon it, or they can expand upon it, or you can ask questions based on what they said.
So it helps the office facilitate.
It'll help you. It'll help them. Okay. It'll help everyone.
I've been through, John, almost, I would say, 25 revisions of this
to bring
form.
We want them to come
this
in
the best form
before
I've
we...
Yeah,
so far,
I do
so
like the... Yeah.
No, they're really correct.
Okay. Yep. It's clean. It's
all filled out.
I like the way you cut it down.
This is one of the best I've seen, Lawrence.
Yeah. What we got here.
Very good.
Very good.
I think it's very good, though.
Look what we got here. What you did.
Well, what I was saying is that they had the one sheet that had their signature block, and they would sign it, and that was it.
Yeah.
They didn't pay attention
right.
to what we
right.
gave and took on with them. Most of the time they walked over that.
Right.
We had a gentleman, I won't mention any names, last meeting, I believe, and he had been here 6 months ago.
Right.
Representing a family member on exact, almost the same variance, and he came in and did the same exact thing he did last
time.
Yes, he
did.
He asked to be come back later and try again.
Yep.
He should have known he needed to do those answers.
I agree.
He wasn't prepared.
At the risk of nitpicking, special use exception. It says special exception. I don't know if that was a typo or.
It's a typo.
Okay.
I'm working on it.
Okay.
It's a draft.
Okay.
But again, I think it's well done.
Wow. Yes, it is. I'm impressed.
Good job. Well done. Plus, it's short.
Yeah.
The shorter, the better.
Yeah.
And I think what Lawrence says, it forces the applicant to when he gets this, he turns around and he says, oh, geez, even if he forgot to put it down there and he's rushing or something's happening, he comes to the meeting, he takes a look and he says, oh my God, I didn't figure that out. You know, this is what.
Well, anyway, if we have to, when they come up to the podium to be and they're sworn to give testimony, we can hand them a copy of what they gave us. But the lumber will come over that.
Well, another thing I like about this is that it has the three listings. You know, the owner, the applicant, and the attorney.
Yeah.
Which identifies everybody if there are all those parties, but also it might suggest to someone who is not capable or of presenting their case that they might want to consider
an attorney.
Yeah.
You know, well, some of the problem is that people that come in have been told by neighbors or people down the street or relatives that it's already built. Just go in and plead your case. You're going to get there.
Oh, it's better to beg for forgiveness than ask for permission?
They do. That's what it seems like. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Right.
I like that. That's a pretty good way to put it.
Oh, man.
And it seems
we had one the other, a couple weeks ago, we had one in a very substantial size little development, and I told you that there was 129 variances had been granted on this map. That wasn't even the whole development. That was just that map. 24 by 36 inches to 100, 129. Whatever, 40-foot lots all over the place. What are you going to do?
You
can't barely build on it without.
Well, it seems like we've really, really made some progress here. How about? Has anyone come up with any idea how to get these people to send in a request for a certificate of compliance, because the permits build like that? In other words, for them to get a certificate of compliance, they have in their packet a request to have an inspector come out and give them the final.
Well, they have.
Now, what happens is we get those old ones, like Lawrence's department is trying to get those inspectors to go in and get the old ones, old, way back, you know, and clean up the areas where we don't have certificate of compliances in a lot of subdivisions.
Well, if a building permit expires, then wouldn't somebody?
Well, you can build your house and you can get a
renewal permit for $7.50.
I understand.
Yeah. They keep rolling.
But that's good for another year.
That's it.
So once that has expired, nobody's come in to renew.
You got to get another one.
And that's fine.
Well,
yeah,
that's fine. But I mean, does anybody check at the end of, you know, if check the permits to make sure that a CO has been issued?
Supposed to be.
Yeah.
Well, you got two different departments now. You got their COs being considered by the building code department.
Right.
We're looking at the CFC to make sure it conforms to zoning regulations.
Okay.
Two different things. Unless it's in a flood zone. Unless it's a mobile home needs an inspection of their tie down foundation or their footer and tie downs.
So you got a certificate of occupancy and a what?
Certificate of compliance.
Compliance.
The same form, but it's two different issues. That'd be signed by both.
Gotcha.
In other words, you can build a house. Build your house right now. Go to building code. Do all their things. They'll give you a certificate of occupancy. You move in, no problem. Put it in the backyard. You're not 20 feet. You're only 15 feet.
Well, then
you're
maybe
13 feet. No, wait a minute. You're 13 feet from here. Okay? Or let's say you have violations in there of setbacks. Nobody knows anything about it because building code does not, and they can go on living there unless there's a form that you turn in that says, I need a certificate of compliance, and that compliance says, well, they've got a CO, which is a certificate of occupancy, and also now they need a certificate of compliance, which means they've done everything.
So why don't you reverse that and say that in order to get a certificate of occupancy, you have to have a certificate of compliance?
The same form. You're not getting either one.
We're not getting either one. Yeah.
We don't issue it separate unless it's not in our jurisdiction. then the building code can issue it. There's other issues, the building code doesn't get involved, like a shed for under a certain square footage, then we can issue it. So it's an NA on one and a signature on the other.
Gotcha.
So it is,
the backlogs, there's still a backlog there, but it's not, I don't think it's as bad as it used to be, but there's still some there.
Gotcha.
But that's the reason you're seeing a lot of these come through that have been a long time ago. And if you ask them, you say, did you know you were in violation at this time? And then you look at the property record card and they see, oh my God, this thing was built in 1989.
Right.
And it's been sold four times.
Right.
And sold four times.
Without a survey.
If you pay cash, you know,
right,
it's okay.
Right.
That's just the resort area typically. It's not typically anywhere else, just a resort.
Not us local poor people.
That's the resort area. That's where it seems to happen. We got a little bit away from our rules and procedures by talking about the board adjustment application, but that's okay. Can we go on to signs?
Yeah, let's do that. Jay?
And gentlemen, you had previously requested that I draft a letter